Welcome to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. Across the country, states are passing laws that restrict a woman's right to abortion, and challenges to the Affordable Care Act's requirement of insurance coverage of contraception is being challenged in the courts. In my lifetime, I have seen the pendulum swing in this society from talking about a woman's pregnancy was deemed to be inappropriate to the passage of Roe v. Wade, the pill, and the women's movement in the 1960s, to now an all-out assault on women's rights to controlling their fertility and having access to abortion. A new book now describes this changing landscape in an historical context that is both surprising and baffling. The new book is A Woman's Right to Know: How Women's Health Became a Political Pawn, and the Surprising Alliances Working to Reclaim It. And the author is Dr. Carol Roy, a professor of nursing at Hunter College, City University of New York, one of my colleagues, and a woman's health nurse practitioner. Welcome back to Health Styles, Carol.
Thanks so much, Diana.
Yes, you've been on before, mm-hmm. and it's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
So this book is just fascinating, but I want to first start to talk about, and you do address this in the book, about the fact that we're talking about a woman's right to abortion and access to contraception. So what's wrong with restricting a woman's right to abortion and contraception? So what if this happens?
Women's health and their reproductive health is very important to public health, to the health of women, to the health of children. When women have more children than they can take care of, children suffer, infants suffer.
How do they suffer?
Well, children, women can die, you know, and a lot of women really, their health is impaired and by having too many pregnancies. And it leads to, you know, women used to die all the time just from having been pregnant. And being able to restrict the number of pregnancies, excuse me, and to time those pregnancies so that they're not one coming on top of the other, improves women's longevity and their actual health. The research has shown that children, infants born too quickly after another sibling are more likely actually to be born prematurely, to die. And women, similarly, if they have too many pregnancies, too close together, too old, too young, are also similarly likely to die. We don't think of women dying from pregnancy in this country, but it happens.
And in fact, I think the maternal mortality rate in this country is going up.
The maternal mortality rate is going up, and the maternal mortality rate in the United States, which we all know is a very wealthy country, is the highest among developed countries, and higher even than in some countries, some of the Eastern European countries, for example, where you would expect that our rates should certainly be better, but they're not.
And so some of this is because women don't have full access to contraception. They may not be able to afford it. I was actually surprised that less than half the states have their Medicaid plan covering women who are on Medicaid for contraception.
Exactly, because there's such a taboo around it from certain segments of our society lately. And, you know, a lot of this really harkens back to the puritanical nature of this country. Mm. And it's, you shouldn't have sex. And if you're going to have sex, you know, you made your bed, now you're going to lie in it. No pun intended. But women have to face the consequences of having had sex, even within, I mean, if you want to go to the extreme and say only women who are married should have sex, you know, but still those women, if they are having one pregnancy after the other, and particularly women with other kinds of health problems, diabetes, cardiac conditions, et cetera, those women are really at risk of ill health and dying from those pregnancies.
You also talk in your book about the case of, now you provide women's health services
to adolescents, yes.
Adolescents. Mm-hmm. And you give the example of a young woman who came in to get prescribed the pill because of irregular periods and difficult periods. And it's a example of how if we restrict women from being able to access birth control pills and being able to afford to have them, the quality of their own health is affected.
Exactly. It's not unusual, particularly with young women and with women and older women as well, but with teenagers often have very long and very heavy periods. And I think perhaps the example you're referring to is a 12-year-old who was brought in by her mother. She had been bleeding for 6 months. Her mom had been sick, hadn't been able to bring her in. The mom at least was able to get her iron pills. She knew to do that. But this young girl could have bled out. And I've seen that almost happen. I've never seen anybody completely bleed out and die of hemorrhage in this country. And what's the treatment? The treatment is very simple. The treatment is birth control pills. That is the treatment. I gave that girl a prescription for birth control pills, and within 2 days, her bleeding had stopped.
Wow. Yeah. So in states where they're trying to do anything they can to restrict paying for birth control, these people who really need them, even if not for sexual activity and trying to prevent pregnancy, they may need them for other conditions, and it limits.
It very much limits it. I would imagine that somebody like this patient I'm describing would probably have to go to the emergency room. And at that point in the emergency room, they would probably give her birth control. But it's a very difficult problem. And I also described another patient of mine who needed birth control for birth control, and she couldn't get it. And so I usually see my patients after a few weeks just to see how they're doing on their method. And I said, how are you doing? And she said, I couldn't get my birth control. Well, she couldn't get it because she was just randomly assigned to a Catholic Medicaid HMO that didn't believe in birth control. So I called them they said, well, we have another company that will give that to her. Does she need it for birth control or for other reasons? So I asked the patient. She said, no, you can tell them. I said, she needs it for birth control. They said, well, no, we won't pay. You have to call this company. I mean, it was a long, convoluted, trip for me on the telephone to get her the authorization to get her medicine.
So not all people who are Catholic are covered by Catholic health plans.
Exactly. And unfortunately, in some states, particularly in rural areas, there's only one hospital. And that's often a Catholic hospital. And those women are then forced to live by Catholic teachings. And they may not be Catholic, or they may be Catholic and don't believe in that particular aspect of it. So
under Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, the proposition is that the mandate is that all health insurance plans cover contraception, except in the case of being a religious organization and you are the employer.
Exactly.
And now there is an appeal by the Catholic entities that indeed, even if it's not the church itself that's the employer, that a Catholic-affiliated organization does not want to have to pay for contraception. So this is in the face of most Catholic women saying they want access to birth control.
The overwhelming majority of Catholic women want and use birth control, number one. And there's also a case in court right now he's not Catholic, but of a Hobby Lobby is a business, and the owner is, I believe, evangelical, and he doesn't believe in birth control, and therefore he doesn't want insurance to pay for his employees to get birth control. That's just what other situation would somebody be able to say, sorry, you can't get medication?
Yes. So the Catholic Church, though, we're sort of used to its opposition, but we haven't always been used to, for example, some of the more conservative Baptist religions opposing this. Mm-hmm. And one of the surprising points in your book is that actually organized religion, Protestant religions, were supporters of women's right to family planning and to abortion services.
That's right. And many Protestant religions still are. But the very surprising one was the Southern Baptist Convention. And before Roe v. Wade was passed in the early 1970s, they issued in their yearly conventions a statement saying, we support a woman's access to abortion in the case of a threat to her health, be that physical health, emotional, or psychological health. And because they saw what was happening, women who are pregnant and don't want to be pregnant are often desperate to end that pregnancy. And in days gone by, they absolutely risked their lives. They knew they were risking their lives to end that pregnancy. Well, the Southern Baptists, being religious people and Christian people, looked around and said, these women are dying. This is ridiculous. And we need to support them and give them that access to a safe and legal abortion if their health of any kind is in jeopardy.
So what happened? What changed? What?
It was a very convoluted event. But over the course of the 1970s, and having nothing to do with abortion, the Internal Revenue Service said that there were let me backtrack a little bit. The court case that said that you have to have integrated schools, we can't segregate in the schools, occurred. And then in the South, a lot of white Christian academies sprang up because they were against integration. And the IRS came down under Jimmy Carter, who was a very devout Southern Baptist, and said, wait a minute, guys, you have to pay taxes. You cannot be tax exempt because you are breaking the law by being segregated. Well, things evolved, and it turned out that the IRS had to back down for certain complicated legal reasons. But at that point, these white Christian conservatives had gotten together, and they had raised money, and they had some power, and they really liked it. And one of them described this white Christian group as being, quote, an army in search of a mission. It's kind of like the March of Dimes was. Mm-hmm. They had been all about ending polio. They ended polio. Well, now what do we do? And abortion became their issue. And interestingly, when they first touted that one as, okay, guys, well, now we should be against abortion, the people in the pews said, look, I'm not going to have an abortion. If you want an abortion, have an abortion. I don't care. And not until it was conflated do you want your tax dollars going to pay for abortions for, quote, welfare queens, which is a very derogatory term that Ronald Reagan had used. And at that point, it started to turn, and it became very much a political issue. This was not a moral issue. And then there was some infighting in the Southern Baptist Convention, and there was a coup. And so the people who were these anti-abortion people took over, not because so much they were against abortion, as that they wanted the power that came with that mission.
Yeah. So this is very connected with civil rights, actually, and some of the racism that was going on in this country.
Absolutely.
Which is very interesting. Yeah. The other, you mentioned Ronald Reagan, but when he was governor, he signed, as you point out in your book, he signed into law one of the most liberalizing abortion laws in the country.
And one of the first, yep. Mm-hmm.
So he does this shift. Mm-hmm. So he's doing this shift because his own party, the Republican Party, is shifting. And is that because this religious contingent within many of them were conservative Democrats at one point.
That's correct.
And then with the civil rights movement, switch parties. Mm-hmm. So they enter the Republican Party, and now they're becoming this force to reckon with, and so Reagan sees the handwriting on the wall. Is that what happens?
To me, my reading of it is that's exactly what happened. And in fact, they were thrilled when Christian conservatives were thrilled when Ronald Reagan was elected, and expected him to do their bidding on their big issue now, which was abortion, and he didn't. He paid lip service, but he never really, he wasn't as whole hog against it as they had hoped. My guess is because truly in his heart of hearts, he really wasn't. He didn't see a reason. Obviously, he signed a liberalization of abortion laws in California. So it was, and the other just factor there is that the evangelicals, the conservative Christians, had been very much marginalized in society and made fun of after the Scopes trial. And they always talked about wanting to have a place at the square, in the public square. And boy, they got their place in the public square.
So let me just remind listeners that we're talking today with Dr. Carol Roy, who is a professor of nursing at Hunter College City University and a women's health nurse practitioner. She's the author of the book, a new book, A Woman's Right to Know, How Women's Health Became a Political Pawn and the Surprising Alliances Working to Reclaim It. The book is available on Amazon.com.
Absolutely, and they can read a chapter at my website, Carol, CarolRoye.com.
Say that one more time.
It's Carol Roy, CarolRoye.com.
So the E's at the end of Roy, not the end of Carol.
Exactly.
Good. So let me talk for a minute about contraception, because That's been stunning to me, the extent to which we are now moving in this country to try to limit access to contraception. Margaret Sanger, who was a nurse and the founder of Planned Parenthood, she went to jail because there were laws at the time that said you cannot put information about birth control through the Postal Service, right. And she did. So she went to jail for this. And there was this growing movement that, of course, got accentuated during the 60s and the early 70s with the women's rights movement. What's going on now? Why are we no longer, are younger women not realizing that this may not be accessible to them? What's your take on the forces that are moving forward with our restriction of contraception? It's not just the Catholic Church,
no, it's
right?
Not. Right. No, it's not. I mean, there is this conflation of contraception with being promiscuous. And Mike Huckabee, former Governor Huckabee of Arizona, recently
Of
Arkansas, I'm sorry, yeah. Said something about, you know, he was talking about, oh, these women just want to have sex and use contraception. And I'm just shocked. I mean, we're talking about women and men, hello.
Yes.
As I have said, if the women were having sex with each other, this wouldn't be a problem. But, you know, it's and of course the men are totally left out. So it's kind of these promiscuous women wanting birth control. They need birth control for their own health. They need birth control so that they can limit the size of their families and have the number of children that they can have and support and take care of. And I think that young women today, more and more my sense is that they're beginning to get it. But they're not used to it. They didn't see what happened when people had to go to back alley abortionists, yeah. And you know, were really, you know, were dying, had horrible sepsis, and were maimed and actually killed by this. So that they don't have that memory, you know, that older women do. And but I think that my sense is that as going to women's meetings and things, that the younger generation is starting to get it. This, you know, they're in jeopardy.
So this movement to limit contraception is sort of stunning from the standpoint of we've documented, we have the evidence showing why it's important, mm-hmm. and yet it's being ignored. And religious organizations, it's like you, for some, that the woman's life is not important. It's the life of this
exactly.
fetus that is more important, or potential fetus. So why is organized religion, you know, Catholic Church, they've made that clear, but they're ignoring what their women want. What about other religions? Why is this happening?
It's an interesting phenomenon, particularly across Orthodox religions. There was a two-year study at one of the Ivy League schools where the religion department just looked at commonalities across Orthodox religions, not having to do with abortion or anything else. They were just, you know, what is it that makes an Orthodox religion? And they came out with one issue only, and that issue was misogyny. Keeping women down has been a long-held tenet of all, across religions, of Orthodox religions. And why that is, I certainly don't know, but it has been. And so women suffer, because what is the thing that separates women essentially and basically from men is that we have the ability to get pregnant and to bear a child. And the strong need to keep women down is in no doubt related to that, but I certainly couldn't explain that.
Yeah, it's also been amazing to me that there have been insurance companies that would cover Viagra and Cialis and other performance-enhancing medications mm-hmm. for men, mm-hmm. but would not cover contraception for women.
Exactly, and because those who run those insurance companies, you know, they're men. And there are so many non-contraceptive-related benefits of hormonal contraception, of birth control pills. I've spoken about a few. You know, women who have a family history of ovarian cancer very often are told to go on birth control pills so that they prevent ovulating, which prevents, you know, reduces their likelihood of getting a disease as serious as that. And there are many other reasons. And besides which, just simply preventing pregnancies is a very important health-related issue.
Yeah. And we should point out, you have a large family.
I do indeed. I have six children. I've had six pregnancies. I lost my first pregnancy, but we adopted our youngest. So I do have six. I'm a big fan of big families. I have 12 grandchildren, and if they want more kids, I'm all for it. But only for women who want those children and can take care of them.
Yeah. So we have these alliances forming. What are the most hopeful alliances that you're seeing in terms of trying to make sure that women keep having access to contraception and the right to abortion?
There are many religious organizations, including Baptist organizations, that completely and wholeheartedly support a woman's right to and I say a woman's right, I mean, we have a right to health care, we have a right to birth control, we have a right to abortions. I mean, that's just part of that health. And there are some wonderful, as I said, Baptist ministers as well as other Protestants. And I actually recently heard a discussion with a young evangelical college-age student who was part of a college evangelical program. And he said, this young man said, you know, abortion is an issue for the people having an abortion. Why should I say no abortion for you? And the fact of the matter is that one of the oldest and most deeply held tenets of the Southern Baptist is, believe it or not, separation of church and state. And I've heard a number of evangelical scholars say the same thing. What you do in your life, you know, people in the United States, it's your business. In the church, we say no abortion. In the church, we say no gay marriage. But why should I tell you what to do? And this is not a religious country, right? I mean, this is not a country, you know, ruled by a given religion. Everybody has the right to behave the way they want to. And but yet the Southern Baptists, in particular, and the Christian right movement is trying to control everything that we do. You know, you talk about small governments, stay out, you know, well, stay out of my decisions about what medicine I'm going to take, please.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So what's your sense of other religions? So there is this sense in this country that we are a Christian nation. What about Jews? What about Muslims? Where are they standing?
There is, well, again, the Orthodox end of both of those religions would say, the very Orthodox Jews would say no birth control. And I'm not as familiar with Muslims, but I know, you know, in the Jewish religion, again, no abortion. But that's not most people, you know, and well over 90% of people in all religions, including the evangelicals, including Catholics, use birth control. Women have used birth control, obviously, or we'd have lots of families running around with 15, 16, 17 children. Mm-hmm. And we don't. And we mm-hmm. don't because people choose to limit their family size. And even these men, primarily, who go around talking about women shouldn't use birth control, I often want to say, and how many children do you have? How long mm-hmm. have you been married? They're using birth control.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want other people to use it. I don't, mm-hmm. It's just baffling.
Mm-hmm. And what about the morning after pill?
The morning after pill, which is often called Plan B, there's another type of pill called Ella, is a pill that prevents pregnancy. It's so important to stress that. Is there an abortion pill? Yes, there is. It's RU486, totally different pill. The morning after pill is essentially a birth control pill. It is a birth control pill in a slightly different formulation. It prevents pregnancy. If a pregnant woman took the morning after pill, it wouldn't do anything. She'd still be pregnant. And it's really important for people to understand that. It prevents pregnancy.
So it's preventing pregnancy so that if I've had sex and I'm worried, the condom broke or what have you,
mm-hmm.
I want to make sure I'm not going to become mm-hmm. pregnant, that I would use Plan B or the morning after
right.
pill to prevent a pregnancy that
right.
might happen to from happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand that there's some pushback on this as well.
Oh, yes, there is. Well, there's pushback on the birth control pill itself. Some people say, oh, no, it prevents, you know, it kills a conceptus. And it doesn't. The
yeah.
research is very, very clear on that. Yeah. It does not kill anything. And in point of fact, and I think this is an important point, research has shown that probably close to half of pregnancies that occur or never become a pregnancy. And for most women, they're not even aware of it. And I, in my own practice, I've seen this where a patient had been in 2 days before, had a pregnancy test. It was positive. She comes in to see me. Oh, great. I'm not pregnant. I got my period this morning. Well, you didn't get your period this morning. You had a miscarriage this morning. But so nature itself terminates probably close to half of the pregnancies that occur. Yeah.
Well, we've got a lot of work to do, I think. Yeah. And your book is fabulous. It's such a fascinating read of things that I didn't have a clue about. And the history is just, and showing how that history has evolved over time to shape what we're doing today.
Exactly.
And some of the battles that we're fighting today is really important. So I want to thank you for this work and also encourage people to get a copy of this book. It's A Woman's Right to Know: How Women's Health Became a Political Pawn and the Surprising Alliances Working to Reclaim It, by my guest, Dr. Carol Roy, a professor of nursing at Hunter College City University and a woman's health nurse practitioner. Thank you so much, Carol.
Thank you, Diana.
You've been listening to Health Styles. We are brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College. You can follow us online on our blog at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. If you want Carol Roy's information, go to carolroy@.com. Carolroy.com. E after Roy, not after the Carol. And I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program. Thanks for tuning in.